The following is an at-will presentation.
Angels and gods and aliens, please help me. I pray for myself and pray for my family and friends and lovers and strangers and enemies. Shine light down on them and me so I can properly see me. I pray in the name of love, just be, not this, not that, beyond definition, me.
Mr. Mickey, suburban Chicagoan Midwestern sticky boy within 5.4 miles from where I was born, bred from corn, Hanover Park, hand over that spark, Mickey. Purdue educated, red herbated breath for New York City's fashion, sequin plated, legendary. Paper magazine's intern writes column after column after column. Mr. Mickey's sticky picky sense of now, Big Apple's do's and what's and where's and how's. 25 years at paper's glossy papered pages telling stories of cool. Climbing the ladder up, batter up to editorial director, naysayers, deflector, storyteller. My favorite storyteller, feller, casting speller's career maker. If his walls could talk, wait, when his walls do talk, you listen. He knows everybody. Knows him, sequined, glistened. How many Lacoste shirts does it take to run New York City? I said, how many fucking Lacoste shirts does it take to run New York City? Extraordinaire. Fashion's passion. Glasses, big frame, sides of his head still have hair robust. They say shamans have tummies because they store more energy than the rest of us. He's the best of us. Another era's vocal fry. Chains on chains on chains. Glowing small town Windy City success story showing pageant queen, host of Miss Universe's pageant scene. He should have his own show. You hear that, studio heads? This man needs to have his own show. Philanthropic traveler, India's biggest fan. The colors live inside of him and radiate different hues than any other man. If some are colorblind, he is colormind, an all-seer. Chitta activist making a difference against indifference. A doer needs first believer, and my God, does this man believe. I met him first when I was 21, fresh-faced in outer space, new to York's new. A friend of his forever I always knew. We're from the same neighborhood, him and me. Dreams, realities for the good, a brightness, a likeness, a sense of self-worth. Years later, we meet again and again and again, and what is this earth if it isn't beautiful, Mickey? He reminds me of someone I used to know. I mean that in a past life reference, an old friend, remembering to remember the glamour, the positivity, the glitz, the trend. He once said to me, "You're so gay, but you're not gay." He gets it. It gets him. I get him, and now we got this.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Mickey. Who are you, Mickey Boardman?
Who am I? It's funny because, you know, my grandmother, my father's mother, whenever anyone would ask her what nationality are you, she'd say American, and like, wouldn't talk about her background. So on some level, my mother is 100% Polish immigrant. I mean, her grandparents were born in Poland and came to America. And my grandparents spoke Polish. We have Polish food at Christmas Eve, all that kind of stuff. So right. I've always identified as Polish, even though I'm really only half Polish. Mm. But not that that was your question. I don't think you were asking for my Ancestry.com
No,
lineup.
It's good.
But, and you know, Grindr is making this little movie about me today.
We go from Polish to Grindr.
We go from pierogies to, you know, Polish sausage.
To pierogies. Bump
to kielbasa. Because they sort of asked me something like, who are you?
Right.
And at the base, I just am happy and I want to spread joy and love and good feelings and sort of shine a light on how amazing life can be and how amazing the world is. Because I feel like sometimes people forget. And really, if you think about it, I mean, as you said, we're from like 5 miles apart. And
yeah.
I don't know how things were. Where did you go again, Glenn?
Well, I was born in Schaumburg, and I lived in Schaumburg for like 5 years.
Wow, that's like literally next door to where
I'm from. Yeah, it's 5 miles from Hanover.
I mean, I could walk there. I mean, it's literally they touch.
Right, yeah.
They touch.
They're
as
neighboring.
We are touching now.
Exactly. They're neighboring cities.
Yes, yes,
but
yes.
Then I moved to Glenview.
Okay, Glenview.
And then went to, yeah.
You know, I mean, in Hanover Park, where I'm from, like, you know, we ate at McDonald's all the time. And we went to the Woodfield Mall. And, like, I had to beg, like, to get to the Marshall Fields. I'm telling you. We would go to the JCPenney. And I just was like, this is not my place.
She ain't
I love
JCPenney.
No, but, you know, I can be happy. And I am a shopaholic. And I could shop at a hardware store. I could shop at anything except for a fur store. Although I've been actually, because I'm cruelty-free, but I've actually gone with my friend when she was buying a mink coat. So.
Well, what about leather?
I don't wear leather. I don't wear down. I don't wear. I just got this new Patagonia coat they sent me that has no down, which I'm very excited about.
I love that.
Anyhow, but you look very fetching in your leather trousers.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that.
I love a leather and I love a fur. I mean,
it's all right.
I know it's terrible, but I grew up like in a big Italian family and I grew up in an antique store too. So like fur is this treasured thing in my family and always has been. So I don't buy any new fur at all, but like something about a vintage fur that really just gets me hard.
Can we see proof of that, please?
Later.
Mick runs to get a vintage fur and throw it on top of Nika. But no, you know, it's like, and whatever, you know, for me to end up in a little tiny hot box with a leather pants wearing TV star who I had a crush on for a long time. You know, life is magic. Like if you just stand, if you just believe, visualize and stand back, the magic fucking overwhelms you.
Is that something that you've always known since you were a little kid?
I have. And, you know, it's funny because my very closest friend hates when I talk that way. But when I was a kid, I never have been one of those people who I don't consider myself ambitious, even though, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't. How do you know, how can you know you want to be an actor or a doctor if you've never done it? I mean, acting, I guess you can because if you know you can play make believe when you're a child and stuff.
Or you see TV and you're like, that's what I want to do. Yeah.
But you know, I never knew kind of really like what I wanted to do. I just kind of visualized a lifestyle that I wanted to have, and it was, you know, I always reacted to you know things about Europe on TV or in movies or glamour or fashion or. You know, and it didn't, it's not that I thought, oh, I have to be rich or I didn't know how that world worked, but I knew that I had to be there. You know, I mean, I knew I had to be not where I was and not that I didn't love Hanover Park, Illinois. And I love, you know, it's great and I'm happy I was born there. And I don't know what portion of me being how I am comes from being in a town where the most exciting thing was like to go to the Woodfield Mall. You know what I mean? Like we literally...
But, Woodfield Mall's great.
Yeah, I love Woodfield Mall. And I love Stratford Square Mall in Bloomingdale, Illinois. Yeah. They also had a Marshall Field.
In Old Orchard and North
Quarter. Yeah, oh, those were super fancy. That's like when I was, you know, when I went to those places, I thought, this is where daddy belongs. But, you know, but I feel like I'm so happy. Like, I'm thrilled to live in New York. I'm thrilled to see anybody. I was with Niall DeMarco earlier who, you know, have you ever met Niall DeMarco?
Oh, wait, yeah, I have.
One in America's Next Top Model and Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Deaf activist and super duper cute. And
so sweet.
The sweetest, sweetest, and cutest. And just did some scandalous photos for BuzzFeed where he shows his butt and stuff.
Nice.
Which, you know, hey, there you go.
There you go.
And, but you know, that to me, like that is the thrill. I remember being at Woodfield Mall at the theaters seeing Grease, the movie before you were born probably. Or, you know, and Johnny Morris was in line, who is the sportscaster for CBS 2 News. And you would think I'd seen Madonna. I was like, Johnny Morris. Like I was so,
Did you do that to him?
I didn't say anything. I was like petrified because it was before I was able to hobnob comfortably with celebrities. But, you know, to me, that was like a thrill. And, you know, going to see Grease at the theater was a thrill. You know, I'm easily thrilled.
Right.
And I appreciate – I'm thrilled that I'm easily thrilled. And
you're one of the happiest people I've ever met in my life.
I have – I mean, I've had dark moments.
Of course.
I think one of the reasons I'm so happy is I've had, you know, deeply dark moments. So I know but, I always thought then – and more that you really – the first step to getting to paradise is visualizing it. Like where is it that I want to be? Because, you know, if you want to be in show business, you have to go to New York or Hollywood. It's, you know, and that – there are people who I feel like think, oh, I wish I could be in show business. And it's like so fucking move.
So just
you know what
it.
I mean? Just go to Paramount Studios, knock on the door and say, can I sweep the floor? Can I deliver the mail? What can I do? I'll answer the phones. And then you're in. And it's like – it's not so hard.
No. I mean you're listening to two people that literally just did that. I mean I moved to L.A. when I was 17 years old and that was it. Like,
there you go.
Two kids from Chicago.
Yeah.
So
– and, you know, and I love it. And I think that – I mean, you know, it's weird, but I'm – it's not that weird, but it's – Oprah Winfrey, the story about her life, she was a little girl sitting on the back porch, and she was like the product of a one-night stand. Mm. The parents hated each other. I don't even know if they ever got married, but, you know, she was born. They didn't want her. Every woman she knew was a maid. This is in the 50s in rural Mississippi, like the place that you can imagine. Now it's, I'm sorry, Mississippi, one of the most racist states. Then you can imagine in the 50s, she was sitting at like 4 or 5 on the back porch. Her grandmother was in a maid's uniform. Do you know this story? Hanging up sheets. And she said, Oprah, girl, you better pay attention because you're going to be hanging up sheets one day yourself. And Oprah said, she doesn't know where it came from, but she just said, I'm not going to be a maid. Hmm. And that woman grew up to be the most powerful person in our country.
Absolutely.
Who's peaked, and she's probably is not as powerful as she was a, like,
but it doesn't matter. I mean, she's fucking
but whatever her. The case, I mean, yeah. And it's like if you said to someone in the late 1950s, black girl from Mississippi is going to grow up to be the most powerful voice in America, people would laugh in your face.
Yeah. It's wild.
So almost the more ridiculous it is, the more likely it can happen, I feel like.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Which is a good comforting thing, you know, I feel like, because it keeps you going on long, hard, lonely nights.
Mm, it's true.
As does this podcast.
As does this podcast, the love bomb.
But, yeah, and I, you know, my friend who thinks that that's just bullshit, and that's like what rich, successful people say to sound new agey. But I'm not that rich.
But
I am successful, but I honestly believe it's true.
Because
why else am I here? Like, you know, when I was a kid, when I worshipped this woman, Princess Gloria von Tournantaxis. Do you know her?
No, but I love her already.
Yeah, she was so incredible. And I would always see her in Vanity Fair, and I remember seeing her on David Letterman a couple times when I was like a teenager. And she was a countess, really, whose family was kind of Hungarian, fled the Nazis, lost everything. She was Catholic. She was like 21 and married a 60-year-old bisexual, perhaps deeper, perhaps gay, prince, the richest man in Germany, Prince Johannes von Thurn-Taxis. Mm. Had 3 kids. He died. And, you know, she wore like crazy Christian Lacroix poof dresses and had punk rock hair. She like loved attention. She, for the prince's 60th birthday, she had Prince perform at the castle. Get
genius.
It, Prince, but
yes.
May he rest in peace. And she just was like a total wild woman, filled with contradictions, though, too. And after the husband died, she kind of reorganized the family estate and got it out of debt and showed that she was an amazing businesswoman. And now she, like, dresses very conservatively in, like, corduroy pants and goes to mass every day. She's super Catholic after she'd been this wild sort of party girl who I'm sure did coke with the Rolling Stones, among others. Anyway, so I sort of had always worshipped her. And I one day got an email, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or 50, something like that, from somebody I know, a book agent, who said, oh, can you do me a really big favor? Can you have lunch with my friend Gloria von Thurn-Taxis? You'd really be doing me a favor. And I was like, I do you a favor? It's like someone sending me an email, could you do me a favor and let Nico give you a blowjob? I'd be like, God damn it. Okay.
Fine.
You know what I mean? But it's like she was delivered to me. And again, I'm not so special. I'm not so unique. I'm not so deserving. And I just think that kind of stuff is out there. And I mean,
so do you think, like, that's what it is, this power of manifestation? Do you think that is why you're here?
I think in a way, and I definitely think it is why I'm here. And I think it's because at a certain point, I realized that I needed to be ready for those opportunities and take advantage of those opportunities.
Have you ever been scared of them at all?
Yes.
Yes, you have.
And you know what bravery is, Nico?
Tell me.
Bravery is doing it even though you're scared.
Right.
People who are brave are not, it's not that they're not scared, it's that they do it anyway.
No, the most beautiful things in the world come out of the release of fear.
Absolutely. And fear and excitement are actually, if you close your eyes, are very similar, you know, as is ejaculation, sort of similar to those things. And so I do think that it's not just, okay, I'm going to visualize that I am Miss Universe or that I am going to, you know, have sex with the hottest man in the world. But I love that those are my 2 examples of my goals. But, or I'm going to have this job, and, you know. But you have to be ready, and you have to, if those opportunities arise, you have to take them by the horns. And I also weirdly feel like I always knew, like when I got the job that I got at Paper, even though I was just answering the phones, I knew that was the place that I was supposed to be. It just felt right, and I felt at home, and I loved them, they loved me, we got each other, and it just felt right. So, I mean, even though, you know, it's not like I said, I didn't even know what working at a magazine meant. I didn't even know you could work at a magazine.
Let's go back there for a second.
Okay.
How old are you when you moved to New York?
I moved here I had gone to Purdue and got a BA in Spanish, graduated a semester
early. Spanish.
In Spanish, yes. Because I changed to Spanish major because I was moved to Spain for a year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Then I graduated a semester early, worked in a suntan lotion factory in Daytona Beach, Florida, where my parents had moved. My mother told me she was going on vacation. My parents were going on vacation to Daytona Beach, where we had a little condo.
Yeah.
And after like them being gone for a month, I called down there and I was like, God, you guys have been gone so long. When are you going back? And my mom said, although my mother claims to this day she does not remember it happening.
Of course.
She said, you know, I didn't want to tell you because I thought you'd be upset, but we moved. Mm. And I said, you thought this is a more sensitive way to handle it, like when I'm living in a foreign country to tell me you love. They had kept our house in Hanover Park, so when I went home, I went there. But still, it was a fucked up, funny thing, funny anecdote. But
I have a family member that moved to Florida without telling anybody, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like I don't know where you end and I begin.
Twins.
Except the leather. Twinsies.
Twins.
But so I think so. But I graduated. I was 21. Probably like 22 or something in 23. I came in 1989, I think.
And paper was already established.
Paper started in 1984. I knew about it. I remember seeing it in the window. Sandra Bernhardt was on the cover. Or no, I take it back. Patricia Hearst was on the cover. And then the first issue that I actually bought was the issue after that was Sandra Bernhardt on the cover, the Jewish star. And Patricia Hearst was, for many years, my favorite celebrity of the 20th century. I later met her. And now we follow each other on Instagram and like each other's thing. And again, like even just that brings me such joy. It's like this is a person who I was fascinated by and is one of the most newsworthy people of the 20th century. Right. And I'm like, you know, she's liking my Instagram.
Okay, so you moved to New York.
I moved to New York,
into paper?
Nope. I moved to New York because I decided when I was in Spain, I can't remember if it was the first time or the second time, because after I worked at the Suntime Lotion Factory, I went back to Spain for a year, taught English for a year, and then that summer went to Germany to live in Hamburg. Because I should have done more of that. Kids, when you're young, just fucking move.
Just go.
Just fucking do it.
I didn't do any of that.
Or if it's school, just sign up for, go to China, go to Africa, go to the peace, do whatever. Because the older you get, the harder it is because you get more established and stuck doing what you're doing. But so I decided I wanted to be a fashion designer. And I told my parents that. And they have always been very supportive, mostly in financially and otherwise. And my dad said, well, I hope you don't think that we're going to support a lifestyle, pay for you to go to New York and support a lifestyle we don't approve of.
Mm.
And again,
which meant what?
Be gay.
Oh.
Like they thought, you know.
But I mean, you were openly gay at this point.
No.
Oh, no, you weren't.
I mean, I was obviously gay, but right. I mean, they didn't accept
it. But you had never had a conversation with them about it.
No, actually, when I came back from Spain the first time, and I had made friends with amazing, fun people who like, for the first time in my life, I had seen like a group of people and was like, oh my God, those people are amazing. I wish I could be friends with them. And I became friends with them.
Hmm.
I had fabulous friends always throughout my life, but it was more like, you know, you go to school and you're kind of thrown together and that doesn't mean to say anything less about them. But this was kind of a thing where like I was like, wow, these are my people who really gays and freaks and dramatics
yes,
and whatnot.
Totally.
So
drag queens.
Exactly. So that night I had a party when I moved back, and my brother was there also. He had graduated a semester late from Purdue and worked on a fishing boat. And then, but anyway, so we had this party in Illinois and invited all our old friends, and a bunch of these friends from Spain came, including this gay guy who slept. He and I slept in the same bed at my house. And, you know, my brother freaked out and called my parents, and my mother came the next day and took me to the psychiatrist. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Well, I actually was. He asked me a lot of questions, and I was deliberately vague. But it was not a good situation. But eventually, so at that point, I don't know what possessed me because it's not like me at all. I said, fine, I'll just go without you. Don't support me. I don't need your money. And they were so shocked and outraged that they said, well, let's not be hasty about this.
Yeah.
And I did need their money because I'm horrible financially. I need a lot of support emotionally and help. Well, not, I just am bad with money. I get money and I spend it. If I don't have it, I don't spend it. But, so I came, I applied to Parsons to be like a continuing ed student and get like an associate's degree.
This is like before Parsons is Parsons, right?
No, it was pretty major.
Oh, it was.
And, but this was this continuing ed class that you just kind of signed up for. So I did that full time. And while I was there, I really liked it. And someone said, why don't you apply to be the BFA program? And I was like, I barely know how to draw. I don't know how to do anything, which actually in many ways is a blessing. I think it's you're lucky if you don't know what you're doing because you don't know what you're not supposed to do.
Right, exactly.
So I did this this admissions thing where you had to like draw, design a collection, and it was all very editorial. It was all like all outfits based on women of style who inspired me: Diana Vreeland, Edie Sedgwick, Mary Tyler Moore, and like, you know, dancing and like with all kind of like headlines and shit of that nature. Mm. And I got in, shockingly, and I even, like, several pieces were in the best of applications show that they did. So it's meanwhile, and I didn't have any clue what I was doing. So I got in, and I was always, like, I was always, like, borderline special class because everybody else had gone to, like, art high school or something, and I was, like, barely knew how to draw.
Right.
The only drawing class I'd ever taken was the continuing ed stuff that I had done. And I learned a lot, and that felt good, but Parsons at the time was very they wanted you to be very Seventh Avenue, and like to them, Michael Kors was as wild as you could get.
Oh, wow.
And I love Michael Kors, but he's not wild.
No, not at all.
And, you know, they didn't want you to be an individual. And a lot of the teachers at the time had been like designer of the year of their year and not made it successfully and came back to be teachers. And some of them were bitter and whatnot. Some were great and some loved me and encouraged me because I did ridiculous, stupid stuff. Like I did the Supremes Go to Shanghai collection that was all in lamé, gold, silver, and bronze lamé. Like this black models with blonde wigs all in like Chong Sam's, you know, like kind of China, like Chinatown. It was major.
Wait, hold on.
Fabulous.
What are you wearing at this point? Like what?
Clown suits.
Clown suits.
Crazy stuff. Crazy. And I was a little bit of a speed freak at the time too. So that, you know, so I was stick man with like crazy long hair and like crazy outfits.
Amazing. I want to see pictures of this, please.
Oh, yes. And, but at the time, I had been obsessed. I was always obsessed with Paper Magazine from the first time I saw it. And when I was living in Spain the second time, I became friends with this woman, Alex Kuczynski, whose father is now the president of Peru, Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, PPK. And so she was best childhood friends. She's from Washington, D.C. And so her best friend, Wendy, was the managing editor of Paper. And I met her socially. We hung out a few times. And I said, oh, my God, you work at Paper. You're so lucky. It's my favorite magazine. And she said, why don't you come be an intern?
Yes.
And we had to do an internship, I think, at Parsons. And I remember I also, before that, went and applied to work at Francesco Scavullo's studio. Do you know Francesco Scavullo?
No.
He used to shoot every cover of Cosmopolitan for like 30 years, like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, basically, like, and discovered Gia Carangi. And he just was known for that kind of, like, disco lighting. He was a huge superstar.
Yeah.
And this, he was
gay?
Yeah. You know, but like with like a little scarf. But again, you know, from the old, like so old at the, in those days, in the 80s, he was old. So, I mean, I'm sure closeted like Valentino was and that stuff. And they were a little outraged that I would apply because, like, I'm not a photographer. I don't know anything about photography. They're like, well, why did you apply here? And I just said, it sounded fabulous. You know what I mean? It's like Francesco Scavullo shoots all the covers of Cosmo. And I thought, oh, whatever, I'll get coffee, I'll answer the phone. I don't know. And that didn't go. But so Wendy hooked me up with this interview to be an intern at Paper. And I remember the woman who was in charge of interns then, Maggie McCormick, was a lunatic. Sort of looked exactly like Martha Plimpton, but with a bottom tooth missing, but with flaming red hair.
Yes.
And not smoking, chain smoking the whole time.
In the office. Yes.
Chain smoking like crazy. No air conditioning, no floor really, just kind of like 2x4s or whatever. And she'd say, like, what's the last band you saw? What's the coolest club in New York? Like all these questions, and I'd be like, Soul Kitchen, Happy Mondays. And for some reason, she liked me. And, you know, she also was the type who was like, don't talk to anybody. And if you don't have anything to do, look busy. She was like the last of the look busy bosses. Because now nobody looks busy. They don't give a shit. They're just on their phone, these kids today.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, and they hired me. And the thing was, I would be at Parsons and they were like not feeling my magic in any way. But at Paper, they loved my outfits. They loved, and you know, that really encouraged me. I'm the type who needs a lot of praise. I sometimes tell people, even if I'm just barely doing my job, you have to give me positive feedback because I need that to like to thrive and do well. And that's why I try to give people positive feedback as well.
Very sweet.
When they deserve it, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And so I ended up failing this class my senior year of Parsons. And meanwhile, now I love them. The school's great. I've spoken at the graduation. I've like helped a critic to help pick the designer of the year. And they, you know. And I remember the woman who told me I got kicked out, Lisa Smiler, works at the CFDA now. And I had to kind of comfort her. She was basically crying. And I was like, it's okay, Lisa. Because it was a whole crazy thing where I was going to fail one class. And then I took this in-class final. And I did amazing. And they couldn't believe it. Like, you're so great. Why are you such a freak? Like, I don't understand how you could do this amazing work. But you're always a freak. Because I was a drug addict.
Mm.
And then they've never done it before, but they were going to give me an at-home thing to do over Christmas, so they weren't going to fail me. Right. And so I went to pick up that project, like, it might have been Christmas Eve. It was either the 23rd or Christmas Eve. No one was there but me and this woman, Lisa, who was the assistant to the director, and she had to tell me I failed my other class. We only had two classes, which I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
But it'll be good in the TV movie of my night.
Exactly. Who's going to play you?
And, Kathy Bates. But Tom Cruise, he's short.
Tom Cruise.
But anyway, so ironically, so that's like the day before Christmas. So I go home for Christmas, come back, you know, to New York, and Maggie, flame-haired Maggie,
yes,
quit on New Year's Day.
Oh, bitch.
And she had been the office manager, intern director, party photographer, club writer.
Who was the boss
photo
at
editor,
this point?
Kim and David.
Kim and
started
David.
Paper.
Okay.
And they were amazing, and particularly Kim, because David was always in charge of the words, and Kim was in charge of fashion and visuals and things, and I'm, you know, really a fashion person, so she was like a mother to me, and I learned everything I know really kind of from her, and she's a Scorpio. And
I love it.
Who's a, you know, who are bossy bitches.
Right.
Scorpios. But anyway, so that she quit on New Year's Day, and they kind of didn't know what to do, so they said, could you just answer the phones until we figure out what to do, and that was 25 years ago.
Ah, and here you are now.
Yeah.
And your title now is?
Editorial director. And if I hadn't flailed that class, I wouldn't have been available to take that job.
Wow. It all fucking happens for a reason.
Yeah.
How much has the magazine changed in 25 years?
You know, the biggest change has been it's still a family. I mean, it's exactly the same as it was with the day that I walked in there. But now our creative director, Drew Elliot, who had started as an intern, so it's sort of, if you think of Kim as the grandma and I'm the dad, Drew is
He's the son.
Yeah. Three generations.
He's on America's Next Top Model.
He's on America's Next Top Model. Genius. He's from Bloomington, Indiana.
So cute.
So great.
Yeah.
Totally a genius. And he, again, the minute he walked in, he knew he was home. We were like, you're the star. You're going to take us to, you know, the next generation. And he left to go work at this social media, amazing social media company in L.A. with this amazing genius, Oliver Luckett, and then actually came back to paper for our 30th anniversary. And Kim and David just said, you know, you take over and take us into the future. And so he's really made us much more digital, much more, I don't want to say mass appeal, but in the old, you know, we always were about discovery, like sort of discovering, like, you were too famous for us in the old days. Like, you know, you had to be like, no one had ever heard of you.
Right. Street kids, club
kids.
Yeah.
And then now we want to do people who have actually big followings, or we want to discover new things about famous people you thought you knew, but you don't know, like Kim Kardashian, Miley Cyrus, Katy Perry.
Next on the Love Bomb.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
So anyway, and that's all because of Drew. So that's been the biggest change, but still it's, you know, we're still a family and we're still
the only real job you've ever had, huh?
Totally.
Yeah.
When I was in Spain, I taught the second time, I taught English to kids and to the Ministry of Economy, like to guys in suits.
Does anybody ever try to recruit you from other places?
Not aggressively. Call me. Just kidding. No, a few here and there, like over the years, but generally no. But I mean, because also I don't really want to do anything else. And if I did anything else, it would be like to start an orphanage in India or something. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to necessarily go to another magazine
that.
Unless they had lots of money. Just kidding.
Hey, look, it's no secret that everybody in the world could benefit from some therapy. I mean, I am currently in the process of finding the right therapist to deal with all of my personal issues. And I came across this company, Talkspace. And we literally reached out to them and were like, hey, this is a perfect match, yo. This show is therapy for me. This show is therapy for our listeners. But there's so much more work that we need to do, all right? Our brains are like computers, and sometimes they need rewiring. And this spot, Talkspace, is pretty fantastic. It's this online therapist community. For literally $32 a week, you can work with an experienced licensed therapist handpicked specifically for you. You can send text messages, you can talk on the phone, you can live chat, anything that you want at any time, unlimited, $32 a week. To learn more, go to Talkspace.com/Nico, and to show your support for this podcast, use code Nico to get $30 off your first month. That's N-I-C-O and Talkspace.com/N-I-C-O. Hey, we all have to do the work, okay? Every single one of us. This is a great tool.
We're taking you up and down. This is the love bomb. We're about to explode.
You love India.
I do love India.
Why do you love India
na,
so
na,
much?
Na, na, na. Go cut to the Indian music. Yeah. Na, 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 na. I don't even know how to do Indian music.
That was there. That was
well,
there.
Chinese music is like, na, 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 na.
Yeah. That's the soundtrack to, like, some Bruce Lee movie.
Absolutely. But I do love it. And, you know, I don't know about you. I never felt like, well, you moved to L.A. when you were a teenager.
17,
right?
Yeah.
17. Did you always feel like, I got to get to, like, did you do it for showbiz or did you feel like you needed to get...
Well, actually, I have like an interesting little story. I was in art school in Chicago. I quit acting for a while, for like a year. I was in art school in Chicago, and then I was like, I transferred to business school in LA because I wanted to get into sustainable architecture and development. So I was going to get my undergrad in business, and then I was going to go to master, and I was going to get my master's in construction and development. That was this whole plan. And but I always knew in the back of my head, the second I got to LA, I was going to become an actor, right? I've just always known that that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life. So, like, I had, like, dreadlocks. I was working at this raw food restaurant. I was pretending to, like, be a student at this Jesuit school, Loyola Marymount, and dropped out within 6 weeks and started working. So it wasn't like I need to move to L.A. to become an actor. It was just how can I convince my parents that it's okay for me to go to L.A.?
Yeah.
So let's go to business school, you know?
I hear you. But like, because I had never thought like, God, I've got to get to New York. You know, there are people who are always like, the minute I graduate, I'm going to go to New York. And the same within. I mean, I went there because that's where fashion was, and that's where I thought Parsons was the best school.
Right.
The same with India. Like, it was not one of those people who said, India's calling me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my spiritual home. But I got invited to go to Fashion Week there, I think, in 2008. And I will go anywhere that's business class on a SkyTeam airline.
Genius.
And I went, and like the minute I stepped off the plane, I was like, baby's home. It's like, these are my people.
What is it about that you love so
much? It's a combination of things. It's chaos, and it's like, it's chaos that makes New York look like Schaumburg, Illinois, which I love.
Yeah.
And I'm at home in chaos. And it's an assault on all your senses, good and bad. And it's so you feel magic, like we described earlier, you know. That kind of thing. And it's also maddening, like it's impossible. Certain things are just crazy and impossible. Right. But also it's, you know, the colors are crazy and the smells and the, you know, and also people love me there. They really do, I have to say, because also I'm the opposite. They're all small and brown and smooth and I'm like big and white and hairy. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, and I'm just so happy to be there. And they're so happy that someone is so happy to be there that it's just it's a spiral of joy and love and sharing.
I feel like your like aura is literally the colors of India.
I think
just,
so
like,
too.
See these just gorgeous colors radiating off of you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, as I said, and I'm being vegetarian. A big part of me, more to me than being gay, is being a vegetarian.
Oh, interesting.
You know,
since you were how old?
For 30 years I've been a vegetarian, but I'm 50, so since I was 20. And it started off really more for health reasons because when I went to Purdue, I only ate at McDonald's. And I got so sick, like I got an ulcer and I was developing a hernia and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm such an addict that I had to, in order to stop getting sick from eating at McDonald's, I had to like say, okay, I'm going to give up meat because then I won't go to McDonald's.
You know,
and
McDonald's?
I had like grilled cheese sandwiches and fries and Cokes and stuff.
McDonald's burgers are like 98% soy.
Really?
With 2% beef powder.
Isn't that hilarious?
Isn't that fucking crazy?
And, you know, they had a veggie burger for a minute and nobody got it except me.
Burger King has a good veggie burger.
They have a veggie burger now, Burger King?
Yeah, they've had it forever.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh, Burger King has a great veggie
burger. That's
great.
Yeah. Well, you know, and in McDonald's, well, London and McDonald's, they have a veggie burger. So when I always pop in for one of those in London. But because I am, you know, I love fast food. I'm like, you know, from the mall.
Yeah.
Or the strip mall even.
But and you've been sober for how long?
20 years.
20 years.
The first was my 20th anniversary.
Happy birthday, anniversary.
Thank you. You know, you just wake up one day and you're like 20 years that, 30 years that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's – see, in the old days, it's like 3 years seemed so long.
Right.
And now it just all accumulates.
But, I mean, like being sober, that – knowing that there's a problem, right, and fixing it in 20 years sober, I mean, like that is self-love, right?
It is. You know, and the thing is, it wouldn't have happened if my boss, Kim, took me to lunch and said, we know you're a heroin addict and you either are going to rehab or you're fired. And I didn't want to quit or I didn't want to be fired. So I went to rehab, even though I kind of wasn't 1,000% into it.
Huh.
Relapsed while I was in rehab.
Rehab here in New York?
In New York City. Yeah. Not outpatient. My insurance didn't cover outpatient because I really wanted to go to Silver Hill where Edie Sedgwick had gone. Like, but it's in New Canaan, Connecticut. I want the glamour.
Yes. Wait a second. Heroin. How long were you doing it for?
I was really a crystal meth addict in my heart, but it was
shooting and smoking.
No. That I was snorting.
Right.
And then heroin, I just snorted.
Oh, you never shot it. Okay.
But that was easier to get in New York City. But right. I would snort like 5 bags a day. I mean, jeez. So it was ridiculous. Like at work, like before, during,
and
after
functioning.
Work. Yeah, heart not even not really. And you know, like being a drug addict is such a full time job,
well,
and
I was so good at it.
I mean, mm-hmm. I was like the best drug addict in the terms of always being on drugs. Even the other drug addicts would say like, "Oh no, it's too much. We can't." I'd say, "We're doing it." Yeah, in church, in the ladies' room, at my best friend's wedding, like we're doing drugs. But you know, and then got fired actually, and went to rehab again, and was such a genius because I was such a smarty pants. I had said to everybody, you know, when they would say they thought I was using drugs, and I'd say, you know, I think I'm manic depressive because I thought, oh, that's such a good excuse. Like,
blanket.
So when you say, tell everyone you're manic, think you're manic depressive, you end up in the rehab that's for dual diagnosis people who are all manic depressive, bipolar, or have anger management issues.
Schizophrenia, whatever, yeah.
And, you know, that rehab, Gracie Square Hospital, and again, it wasn't sleepover. You would just go 3 days all day a week. Literally every person. There was a guy who was a Rikers Island police, you know, a prison guard who had gotten caught with pot or something. Nothing, you know, hardcore, I thought. Other than the two of us, every other person, like, was on welfare, had their kids taken away, was very, like, on a New York hardcore cop show.
Right.
And I fucking loved those people. And the first rehab I was in, which was on 40th Street, was all sort of Wall Street guys who would like make a big deal and then go smoke crack in the hall and then get like a prostitute to get like fucked by 5 big guys while they jerked off. You know, like that kind of.
The ferals.
Which, those are not my people. I mean, Lord love them. You go to your party, I'll go to mine. But yes. I didn't, you know, whereas, and again, the gift of having being fired and having to go to rehab and having lied and saying that I was manic depressive was, I ended up with this group of people who you would think are the last people who I would have anything in common with, or the last people I would get along with, and they were the most amazing people I've ever met. And I learned more from them and bonded with them in a way that I wouldn't, you know, you'd, on some level, you'd think like, oh, these Wall Street guys, I mean, they're white and they're probably mostly suburban. I don't know, but I just didn't relate to them at all. I mean, actually, you should learn something from everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
And really, like, the same way India, those are my people, like, at meetings when I started, like, I would always try to find the meetings with, like, the lesbian housewives in the West Village because somehow those are my people. I don't know why. They just speak to me.
Lesbian housewives.
Yeah. Or, you know, housewives who look like lesbians or lesbians who look like housewives or literal lesbian housewives.
Yeah.
So, no, and it's being sober is the best thing I've ever done because I wouldn't have any of the things that I have now because, it's such a full-time job. And I even see the kids today, and I'm not judging. I'm judging.
Judge
Why shouldn't
bit,
I say
okay.
that I'm not judging? You know, the kids call and they're like, oh, you know, I got food poisoning yesterday and so I can't come in. And it's like you were out all night getting shit-faced, which is fine. It's your life. Get shit-faced. But, you know, it's your
livelihood.
Compromising your life. You know what I mean? And unless you're like, there was that line Bridget Fonda, who I love, was in Jackie Brown. And she always just sat around and like, cut off shorts and smoked bong, did bong hits. And she offered Samuel Jackson a bong hit and she was like, do you want one? And he said, no, I think that kills your ambition. She said, not if your ambition is to get high and watch TV. And I thought, I like her. See, the thing is, drugs are glamorous. And drugs, like the thing that Just Say No, the problem with the Just Say No to Drugs campaign is drugs are glamorous. I mean, to people like me, it's like, if I had a kid who was like 16 and they like took drugs and stole the neighbor's car, a part of me would think, attaboy, you know, like, yes, you're a badass.
Yeah.
But
you're cool.
Yeah. I always, and I find drug addicts attractive.
But
and
I, the most emotionally intelligent people I know are former addicts.
Yeah.
Who are now sober, right?
Yeah.
Like, so the greatest people I know, actually.
Yeah.
They even say, like, to be a shaman, right? You have to know how dark it is to know how light it is.
Absolutely.
And I think, like, you know, I've been sober 2.5 years. You're 20 years. Like, there's just something different.
I totally. You know, yeah, and it forces you to look at things. It forces you to accept things. And, you know, I've been obsessed with the thought lately that if you didn't have a terrible childhood, you can't grow up to be Cinderella. So it's like, I feel sorry for someone who just had a nice, easy childhood in a way, because even though I'm not complaining in any way, I had, and for many years, like if you had said to me, what was your childhood? Like I'd say, oh my God, it was so fun. We laughed all the time. And we did. My family are all hilarious and entertaining and so fun. But, you know, my dad's a drug addict, my brother's a drug addict, and I'm a drug addict. And growing up with a drug addict father, you know, he would come home. Every couple of years, he would sort of disappear for a few days, come home, throw shit around, kick us out in the middle of the night, like with the dog, like at 3 in the morning, my mom, my brother, and me in our pajamas, like with the dog, St. Bernard dog. And sometimes we had money, sometimes we had no money. Like, where are we going to go? Is it too late to go to grandma's house? Like, do we have money for a hotel? And, you know, we were still, like, upper middle class suburban white people, so our lives were not that bad. But when you're kicked out in the middle of the night and you think you're always waiting for that to happen, you hear the door close in the morning, you're like, you know. And I remember being in an AA meeting with my brother, and he dragged and forced me to go. He's always fucking taking my inventory and making me go to AA meetings with him in Tampa, Florida. Lord love him, he has like I think 12 years sober, and he's an amazing person.
I love stories much, brother.
And he you know, it was one of those meetings where, different than New York City, where you just everybody shared in order, like in the circle.
Right.
So I did my spiel. And then he was doing his share, and he was talking about, like, what a traumatic childhood he had and his emotionally unavailable father. And I was thinking, like, oh, my God, what a traumatic childhood he had. And then I was like, wait a minute. Like, I was in the next – I was in the same room or in the next room. Like, so did I have a traumatic childhood? And in a way, I did. But at the same time,
you just looked
who
at
cares? Get over it. You know what I mean? And it's like just –
everyone has
everyone had issues
somewhere.
And you know what I mean, and again I feel badly if you didn't have issues, because then you think it's, you know, that the boy you like doesn't want to date you, you think that's a fucking crisis. You know what I mean? And it's like we could live through anything. I mean, and again, it's not because I'm a Soviet woman or because I've lived through war, but it's like any of us today, even like what we're living through with Trump, is so fucking terrible. But it's like compared to the Nazis, it's like compared to what Poland and Russia, like all these countries went through, it's like
I mean, look what happened in fucking Syria.
Every day. Yeah, it's like we can survive a lot more, and we could survive and thrive and like not fucking complain about it. And that's why. And it's interesting to me, so many, again, and not to keep talking about the kids, because I love millennials, and I think every older generation thinks the younger generation is great and also full of shit on some level. But everybody's outraged about everything. Everybody's outraged about the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial. Everybody's
pulled.
Yeah, well, there you go. Everybody's outraged about like a white girl wore dreadlocks. Right. Everybody's outraged. And it's like if you're always outraged, it's like you're never outraged. And I mean, there are things that are legitimately deserving of outrage.
Right, right, right. It's a fine line.
I don't know if a white girl wearing dreadlocks is so worthy of outrage. But I defer to people who are – if you're outraged, I respect you to be outraged. And especially if you're a black person, I respect you to tell me that you should be outraged. I just think – it's weird that – but I feel happy to have had some adversity in my life and had to deal with issues because – you know, you think at the time, like I thought as a kid, my life was so ruined because A, I was gay, and this is like in the 70s and 80s in Illinois, and like we didn't have fluid in those days. We didn't have anybody on television who was gay. You know, I mean, like you literally brought shame to your family. Like, and my family wasn't, it's not that they were even religious. They were like pretty easygoing, usually Democratic voting people. But so that, like, my whole life was ruined. And I was overweight.
Did you know any other gay people?
No.
No.
I mean, you know, even now, Hoffman Estates High School, where I went to high school, there were 2,000 people in the school. So there had to be 200 gays. Right, right. Like, I could maybe name five. And I wasn't even sure about them. You know what I mean? I've only learned in retrospect. I mean, obviously, the ones who were, you know, dancers in Oklahoma with me, I had a as I suspected. But no, and, you know, also because I was like 10 pounds overweight or 5 pounds, and I thought, oh, my whole life is ruined because I'm fat. And, you know, the thing that I learned in retrospect is nobody gives a shit.
Nobody.
Even though you're gay and, yes, I got teased, everybody gets teased about something, whether, you know, the kids, the guys on the football team tease each other about dumb shit. And, you know, yes, it's traumatic, and, yes, it hurts, and, yes, we all, you know, need a hug and all that shit. But it's – nobody really cared. Nobody cared that – you know, I'm not the fattest I've ever been. I've been – fat in this, but at my fattest, I've had sex with some of the hottest guys of anybody I know. And again, that's the litmus test of having sex with hot guys. Or I've had amazing adventures, or I've had fucking amazing outfits. And I, you know, think nothing, my weight has nothing to do with whether or not I'm going to have a happy life or in any way. And the same with being gay. And yet at the same time, I was convinced at 13 that my life was doubly ruined. Mm-hmm. So I wish, you know, I don't know, we could teach kids that, like, the stuff that most of the stuff that we all worry about is such bullshit right. that nobody cares about.
But you carry that energy with you all the time. I feel like you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so liberating in a way, too, because something I learned from a friend of mine, Angelo, one of my dearest friends from Sandy Springs, Georgia, who now lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And not to keep always bringing this back to romance, although romance is important.
Well, that's what I want to talk about next. So keep going.
You know, he's the type of person who, he's attractive and smart and great. You know, he could go in a room filled with gays and whoever he liked, like he would go up to you and start making conversation. And if it didn't go anywhere, he'd say, have a nice night, go to the next one. And he would never take it personally if right. he was rejected huh. or if he didn't succeed.
That's the secret.
You know what I mean? And the secret is to not care. And again, it's like we were talking about bravery. You could, you know, people are afraid all the time. I'm nervous. I'm, you know, if I have to perform or be interviewed or whatever, I very often think, oh, fuck, why did I say I would do it? It's going to be terrible. What if I sound dumb?
Were you nervous about this?
No.
No.
Okay. This I was excited
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, but
we have a rapport.
We do. This yeah. is like this is a friendly bonding yeah. experience. But, you know, like if I have to be interviewed about fashion, some like what are the trends? Like right. I don't know what the fucking trends are. It's like
but you make like it up and you fucking
yeah,
make
yeah,
it
or
work.
Yeah, I just yeah, and I just give my honest opinion and right. and that's enough. But so anyway, so learning from him that like you don't have to be, you're not a you don't have to. It's not the end of the world right. if you ask someone on a date and they say no, fine. You ask it, you know, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. Mm. And that goes for everything. That goes for romance. That goes for anything.
Career,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it goes for every single thing. So
think about all the rejection that any single actor or fucking
yeah.
model goes through.
I don't know how you guys
day.
Do it. I don't know if I could do it because it's just you're fucking asking
nonstop
for torture. I mean, for me, the thing that's torture of my life is I love a buffet-style approach to life and having lots of different things going on. And we have a million photo shoots and a million creative people who all this one cancels or this has to get scheduled. You know. Mm-hmm. There are so many moving parts that makes it really easy for things to get
to go wrong.
Canceled yeah. or to go wrong or to have to be rescheduled. And that gives me stress. And mm-hmm. I'm looking forward in my life sometime to not having that stress. Mm. But in terms of, yeah, rejection, because even though I tell myself don't take it personally, you still, you know, it's – on some level, the message is you're not right, which can be easily be translated into you're bad or
yeah.
you're wrong. So
there's
I applaud
wrong
all of
you
for doing it. Yeah.
yeah.
But anyway, so it's an amazing thing to know that you can – anything is possible. I think anything is possible, and it's not bad if someone says no. Like no is a full answer,
mm-hmm.
and it's better to ask and be told no than to
right.
not ask because sometimes they'll say yes.
Yeah. You identify as straight, correct?
As a straight woman.
As a straight woman. No, you're gay. And relationship history.
You know, I'm so gay, and yet at the same time, I'm not gay.
That sounds weirdly familiar. Relationship history.
Yes.
First time you were in love. Let's go through this for a little
you
bit.
You know, it's funny, because I feel like I'm in love now, in a way. But at the same time, I've often thought I was in love. But I must say the strongest area of my life, in like if they're going to make a TV movie of my life, is not romance, not
right.
long-term relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I very often, especially when I was younger, would like fall in love with like a straight friend or even like a straight friend who I had hooked up with or, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And I've had like I would say three or four past relationships that I've had in mm-hmm. the past like 10 years, you know, several of them. One says he's not gay.
Mm.
One is from a Muslim family who
it's illegal.
Is closeted
yeah.
and also, you know, was a social climber. And one is fluid bisexually but also lives in another country and is totally comfortable and open on a certain level, but on another level is not. So, I mean,
do you feel like you, like, look for people that are unavailable?
I I need psychological help, obviously. Mm. I would say no, because in a way it's like I find people who deny me the thing that's most important to me, which is right. not recognition in a way, but I just want someone to be like, yes, we're boyfriends. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, and
have you've had that?
I have, but not, you know, only a few times. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, when I lived in Spain the first time, I dated this guy for a year, but again, he was much older, and it was kind of a rebound thing. So it was mm-hmm. a little bit like I was in it much more than he was. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, we were, you know, together, whatever, and blah, 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 blah.
But you're in love right now?
Ish. I mean, I hesitate to say.
Yeah.
In the sense that—
Why do
that
you hesitate?
Because—
For your own safety or for his safety?
No. Because, you know, the thing is, I feel like I am because I'm so happy when we're together. He right. lives in a foreign country. But mm-hmm. also, it just makes, you know, in the past, I get a lot of people, guys coming after me who like want to be in show business or who want
right.
to whatever,
who want
to see
climb.
The glamour
yeah.
of being going to parties and stuff. And, you know, that's fun on some level, but
it gets tiring, I'm sure.
It does. And I feel like this person that I'm talking about is not like that at all. And it also then makes these other guys seem like, it's just not even interesting to
right,
me. Like,
right,
why,
right.
after you've been with someone who you feel so great about being with and who says things that make you feel so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I mean, it's still, it's something that's in an early stage, too. But I definitely feel about him differently than I have. And I feel like maybe it's that it's the most adult relationship.
Okay, I like
in that.
That
sense. Because I also have felt like I was never into younger guys. Even when I was 19, I wanted to go with a 30-year-old.
Right.
But the ones guys who come after me are often quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And although I've dated a few more age-appropriate guys younger than me, but like in like late 30s,
mm-hmm.
who were nice and stuff. But, you know, when someone's much younger, a lot of it's like a babysitting job. Do
right.
you know what I mean? And that I'm
totally.
Not so into. I like to be the weak link. I like the other person to be. I mean, and I'm rarely, if ever, the weak link. But
right,
I mean,
right,
it would
right,
be a
right.
nice change of pace mm-hmm. to be the weak link. So.
How do you feel like you juggle your masculine and feminine energies?
It's interesting. I mean, I think I don't even really think about it. And I think the less you think about it, in a way, the less gay
the more
you are.
Organic
in a way,
it is,
yeah. And I don't mean less gay in a bad way or a good way, but I mean, there are ways that I think like a man, that I'm very much like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways that I'm very feminine or that I feel like a woman or, you know, like I cry or I, you know, am love struck or something like that. But, you know, I also, I don't know, I think that we worry about our roles and if we're being stereotyped. I mean, I'm like the biggest gay cliche on so many levels.
Mm.
Watching Golden Girls, listening to Judy Garland on my fucking iTunes.
Is that something you like always knew you were going to be?
That I'd be a gay cliche?
Yeah.
I'm just naturally attracted. I love the Golden Girls because I love it, not because I think that's what gays should
right,
like.
Nice.
Or because
genius
it's, you know,
show.
It's
yeah.
a fucking amazing show. And, you know, I also love the Military Channel, which
right.
has changed its name to the American Heroes Channel.
Uh-huh.
And that, trust me, I assume I'm one of the only gays watching fucking multi-part documentaries about Hitler.
Well, you know that
and
there's
his obsession
more,
with astrology.
There's more Hitler on TV every single day than anything else that exists.
I believe it. And I watch a lot of it.
It's crazy.
Isn't it? It's insane.
What do you think, like, your ultimate goal for a relationship is?
I think, you know, I think that it's just to be with someone who makes you feel great about yourself, but also you make them feel great about themselves. And
mm-hmm.
it's something that is not consuming, you know, something that does that you can still be you, they can be them. I'm not, I love independence. I love someone else who's independent. I always have said that I like dating someone who's from another country because then you're not, they're not always around. And then when you're together, you're feeling like you're on your honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
Although that could just be rationalizing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, yeah, it's someone who brings out the best in you and you bring out the best in them, really. I mean,
right.
and yeah, I mean, I think you can't fake that. I mean, and after you've sort of felt that about someone, it makes it hard to kind of be in something where that's not the case.
Right.
And what about you?
Fuck, I'm trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself successful romantically?
I think not necessarily. I consider myself experienced romantically.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with the idea of, like, the one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know. I love people. I love, like, being in relationships with people. Mm-hmm. I get bored very easily. And I think that, like, really at my core, like, and I'm sure people will not be happy about me saying this, but I think that I am polyamorous, and I think that I do really like the idea of being in more than one relationship at a time. But that doesn't mean one specific thing. That doesn't, like, meet, like, we're all figuring it out together. I don't know. The traditional marriage and kid, it just doesn't make sense to me. But, yeah. Like, I
hear you.
I don't know. I think I do a pretty good job at it. I think mm-hmm. that I'm doing a better job now than I ever have. I don't know.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
I also feel like, you know, I don't like to look at relationships as, oh, is it a failure? Is it a success? It, you know, some things are meant to
be. It's an experience.
If it's a romantic weekend or if it's right. like a one time, you know, it could still be a positive, wonderful experience, and we shouldn't feel badly or belabor. Like, if it is what it is, I think we have to have kind of just a relaxed attitude about it. So. Mm-hmm.
Being in the position that you're in and seeing so many careers flourish and being yeah. a part of that.
And destroying many.
And destroying many,
inadvertently.
I'm sure. When you hear the term the love bomb, what do you see?
The love bomb.
The love bomb. That's the name of the show that you're on right now.
I know. The love bomb. I love the word bomb, and I think it's positive, certainly. But, you know, I think we're dropping a love bomb on the world, spreading love around.
Absolutely.
It's also like, oh, you're the bomb, meaning it's like the ultimate. So mm-hmm. I think this is the ultimate in disseminating love around the world.
Mm. Do you love yourself, Mickey?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't always, but I absolutely do.
What does that look like? What does that feel like?
It feels great because, you know, you can fight. Fighting it, you could fight it all you want and nothing will change. Mm. You know what I mean? The only thing that will be achieved is you being unhappy.
Right.
So, I mean, I think people can change in certain ways, but the fundamentals of who we are written in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, RuPaul always says, like, how if you don't love yourself,
how the hell
are
you gonna love somebody else? Yeah. Gay man.
And in a way, it's true because it's to me the most attractive thing in any person, you know, other than the large penis. Actually, I don't care about penis size. I mean, honestly, I look like a nice medium size. But the most attractive thing is confidence, and that comes, like, if you feel good about yourself, you project confidence, mm-hmm. and to me that is. Makes everyone's life happier and more successful if you have that. So, so it feels good to that. I'm very confident about what I know and what I don't know, and I'm very confident in who I am. And I, you know, and I'm not bothered. I still want everyone to love me because I'm a Libra, and I, you know, prefer to be loved. But at the same time, they don't, it's their loss. It's their problem. I'm not going to change, and there's nothing wrong with me necessarily, other than the fact that we can all. We still need to evolve and work on ourselves and try to be better people, but it feels good.
What does it mean to love helping other people? You do a lot of work philanthropically, right?
Well, I try. We should all do more. I think everybody should. I think if we could all just do what we do, meaning, you know, like I do clothing sales and host cocktail parties because that's kind of my world anyway.
Right.
And direct that little bit in a positive direction. And I've been lucky enough to meet this guy, Michael Daube, who has this charity, Chitta.
Chitta, that's how you say it. Mm-hmm. Chitta, sorry.
People say it different ways. Mm-hmm. It's a Sanskrit word. It's like aloha. It means many things.
Okay.
It mostly means like illuminated or intelligent. Mm. And he just runs this charity that builds schools, clinics, and women's centers. And it's really him, and there's like a board. But it's a really lean operation, and that. You see where the money goes, and I go and visit the schools that we've helped raise money to build. And it's, again, it's every cliche is true. Every cliche your mother ever told you is true. It is better to give than to receive because.
Sexually, too?
Yeah. Well, not always. It depends. That's something I need to work on because I haven't fully accepted that. It's nice to just lay there and relax while someone else does the work, too.
Exactly.
But you got to give and take. It's a give and take. But, you know, it. You're nourished in a way by giving to others. And it's like, and one of my favorite AA expressions is we can only keep what we have by giving it away.
Mm.
And I love something that seems like it makes no sense. Like it seems like it's actually the opposite of the case. But it's true. We can only, you know, there's this line, you know, one of the last things that Oscar Hammerstein ever wrote, you know, of Rodgers and Hammerstein, who wrote The Sound of Music, among other things. Is he wrote this little bit that is, I could cry just thinking about it. It's one of, to me, the most beautiful things ever written. which you can maybe incorporate into spoken word, is
yeah.
a bell is no bell till you ring it. Mm. A song is no song till you sing it. Mm. Love in your heart isn't put here to stay. Love isn't love till you give it away.
Mm.
So unless you're helping somebody else, you know, unless you're spreading love or doing something, you're not really experiencing it. So.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't
so
that great?
Much.
Imagine it's sung by Julie Andrews.
I want to just like spoken by you.
A
that was
bell
perfect.
Is no bell till you ring it. And
wait,
you know,
keep going. Can you just finish that?
A song is no song till you sing it. I have a terrible voice. And love in your heart wasn't put here to stay. Love isn't love till you give it away.
All right, last question. What is love?
What is love? What is love? That song by Delight, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, love is something that nourishes you and that you give and receive that, you know, makes life worthwhile in a way. So it's, you know, it's just, it's the feeling you have, whether it's for your dog or your mother or just some, your lover.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just kind of in a way the biggest, most important thing in the way.
And why, sorry, last question now. What is it about fashion that you love?
You know, fashion, mm-hmm. I do love. Because it really is a way, when it's its best, it's a tool for people to just express who they are. And,
right.
you know, I'm lazy about how I dress now, and I've been wearing a lot of black since number 45 was elected. And unrelated, perhaps, but I never wore black, ever. Now I've been wearing a lot of black. And, but, you know, I've always felt that you shouldn't, why would you get dressed if what you're putting on doesn't give you a shiver of delight? Like, you feel like your leather pants are, I'm sure, like, oh my God, these are so fucking amazing. I want to wear these. And wet.
Literally sweating.
Literally. Well, it makes you, it keeps you very in touch with your activities,
yes,
if
ma'am.
You know what I'm saying. And, you know, and I think that's incredible. And some of my closest friends, Michael Musto, Lynn Yeager, all really express who they are with their clothes.
Right.
And I think when it's good, it's amazing.
Mm.
You know, that doesn't mean that everything about fashion is great, or that, but I think I totally appreciate somebody who has a look, someone who like has worked on their look and it says who they are. And I applaud them for that because it's, you know, it's, it takes a real commitment. And especially if you have an unusual look, like it's a real, like Isabella Blow, may she rest in peace, had a crazy look. And she really, from talking to her and interviewing her and the bit I knew her, I really felt like what she really wanted is to get fucked. Like she really, like, sex was important to her, and I don't blame her. But she wore crazy outfits, and it's like that really is a challenge. You know, that makes it a challenge.
It makes
like,
it nice. Well, not intimidator, you know?
Yeah, it's like that's not the look to get that attracts the dick.
Right.
She found the dick, though,
she
but you know
dick.
What I mean, Lord lover. But it's, you know, it's, it can be lonely to be a like a to be a real fashion creature,
right,
you know.
For
and
sure.
I mean, it could, everything can be lonely,
yeah.
But that's life. That's showbiz.
And how many Lacoste shirts have you owned over the years?
I could tell. Right now, I probably have 300.
300.
They give them to me.
Yeah,
they give them to me.
But 300.
I have them in different sizes, fat to skinny, and I have them. I have them in black and navy, which I only really wear black and navy. I would say I have 100 navy ones, but then before
100
that,
navy ones.
Well, in different sizes, and also because you know you wear.
Are you a little bit of a hoarder? You're a collector.
A little bit. No, I'm a little bit of a hoarder.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna. This friend of mine who's Syrian is, you know, working with this Syrian charity to collect clothes for Syrian refugees in the Bronx.
Everyone's
so
gonna
I'm
be
gonna
wearing
give
Lacoste.
A bunch. There's gonna be a lot of rainbow Lacoste because I haven't been wearing the rainbow ones for a long time. So.
I'm a bit of a hoarder, too.
Are you?
Of course. But
a whore.
A whore.
Durr.
I'm not a whore.
Me either.
I never have been. I wish I
but
was.
But you like to spread love.
A
what sign
bit.
Of the zodiac are you again?
Leo.
A Leo. That's
yeah.
Right. You're a little bit too much about yourself. You're not about spreading the love.
I'm working on it.
That's okay. Leo's not bad. I have Leo rising. That's,
yeah.
You know, that's the Madonna in all of us.
Mm-hmm. I love you, Mickey.
I love you back.
Thank
I'm so
you.
Thrilled to have been here with
Thank
your
you so
grandma
much.
Tattoo.
Yeah. Let's go take a picture and finalize this shit.
Okay. I'll sign off on everything.
Bye.
Spreading that love around. This is the Love Bomb. This is the show.
Mickey, bored man, you do not make me bored man. I've always wanted a friend like you.
And I always knew that you were going to come into my life. And I'm so happy that you have and that you are. I cherish our friendship so fucking much. And you're unbelievable. You literally are that beacon of light in the world. You are a perfect example of determination and hard work gets you to the places that you want to be in life. All you need is a dream and to believe, and shit can happen. Mickey, I love you so much. Paper Magazine, bow down, bitches. Paper Magazine, like, will always and forever has hold such a special place in my heart. And I am so fucking honored to be on the cover. I mean, literally, it's been a dream of mine. And Paper, you guys have always constantly pushed the boundaries. And Mickey, a lot of that has to do with you and the legacy that you stepped into at Paper Magazine. Follow his ass on Instagram. That's Ask Mr. Mickey. That's at AskMrMickey for some fabulous pictures, darling. And follow me on Instagram, please. That's at Nico Tortorella, NicoTortorella. Follow us on our website, thelovebomb.us. That's thelovebomb.us. Leave comments. Just talk to us. Talk to me or talk to each other.
We're taking you up and down. This is the love bomb. We're about to explode. Nico.